Streaming generates public performance royalties, but so does other forms of public performance, like at concert halls and nightclubs and radio, right? So use in TV and film can generate public performance royalties as well. So it's a different set of money from mechanicals, and people can get really confused to understand that streaming generates performance and also mechanicals for some kinds of streaming. Not all streaming generates mechanicals. Some kinds do.
When you say not all streaming, you're talking like digital radio.
That's
like like Sirius XM or whatever, Pandora Radio doesn't generate mechanicals, but it generates performance royalties. That's not all kinds of streaming, right?
Exactly. So internet radio generates performance royalties for songwriters. On-demand streaming, the law calls it interactive streaming, generates performance royalties and mechanical royalties.
This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features. Annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com. What's going on? Welcome to the New Music Business. I'm your host, Ari Herstand, author of How to Make It in the New Music Business, the book. Third edition is out now everywhere. Hardcover, ebook, audiobook, however you get books, you can find that book everywhere. Today, my guest is Sirona Elton. She serves as the head of educational partnerships for the Mechanical Licensing Collective, the MLC, which I know if you've been following for a bit that I've talked about a bit. It's this new organization started in the States, in the US 3 years ago. Well, depending on when you're listening, January 1st, 2021. And it was officially formed. It was formed by a law that was passed, Music Modernization Act, a few years prior. Basically, the MLC is the only organization that is collecting mechanical royalties from digital streaming services, DSPs, such as Spotify and Apple Music. What are mechanical royalties? How do you get your money? All of that stuff. This is what we talk about. So if you're confused, I mean, we break down royalties and collection and registration, all that stuff very, very intimately and very deeply. So you might typically listen to podcast episodes on like 1.5 speed. I know I do sometimes, or 1.2 maybe. You might want to listen to this at half speed. I'm just saying, there's a lot to take in here. You're going to break out your notepad, a pen and paper. It gets complicated. I'm warning you. I try to slow it down a bit and break it down and use some concrete examples. But the music industry and royalty calculations, it's complicated. Unfortunately, our industry is beyond complicated. I ask her why many times. Is this so complicated? It shouldn't be this complicated. And she's helpful at explaining the whys, but I know that you're most interested in the what and the how, and the what being what are these royalties and how do I get my money? That is what we're going to answer here, and that's what she's going to help answer. We have some extra guides linked in the show notes, some resources that we reference throughout the episode. Of course, if you're an Ari's Take Academy student in our registration, royalties, and release course, you're already a pro in this area and you're registered everywhere and you should be collecting all of your money everywhere because we help you get set up. Quick plug for ATA, go check it out. And for everybody else, this will be a great introduction for you to kind of understand how royalties work across the board, but specifically these new mechanical royalties and how they work in streaming and sales. We actually spent a lot of time discussing how songwriter royalties, if you don't want me to say mechanical, we'll just say songwriter, and how these songwriter / publishing royalties work in sales. And just to clarify, because I want to make this super, super clear from the get-go. When somebody says publishing, it means songwriting. So songwriting, publishing, that's interchangeable. So when we're talking about publishing royalties, we're talking about royalties that are for songwriting and songwriters. And songwriters are typically, well, represented by publishers. So not to be confused with sound recording royalties, which made from artists and recording artists, we distinguish in the industry between recording artists and songwriters. Now, I know that's confusing because a lot of us are both. I'm both. I write songs and I release them as a recording artist. I'm both a songwriter and recording artist. But, you know, there are people, if you record a cover song, you're the recording artist of that cover song, and whoever wrote that original song is the songwriter. So you can see why that songwriter should earn some money too. And it's just complicated, and it just, it's not all from the same place. So we break down how all that works, you know, cover songs. If you're an artist wanting to release a cover song, if you're a songwriter being covered, or you're a co-writer, or all of that. So all the different scenarios I believe we kind of got into. So it's a very educational episode. This is one for the nerds out there like me that really want to understand the who, what, where, why, when, how, all of that stuff in terms of royalties and collection. You can find the MLC at the MLC.com. A lot of what Sirona references during this episode, like the public search feature and making sure that all of your stuff is registered correctly, and you can just sign up directly at the MLC.com. You can find them on all the socials too. They put out some helpful guides on Instagram and TikTok. You can find all of us that make the show happen at Ari's Take on Instagram, TikTok, X, Threads, all of the stuff. But visit ariestake.com. Get on the email list. That's where you're going to find the most up-to-date information. We let you know new episodes come out and helpful guides, helpful information, my musings on the industry. ariestake.com. Email us. Sign up on the email list. That's the best way for us to get in touch with you. You can find me directly if you want to shoot me a DM at Ari Herstand on Instagram. I usually check my DM, so you can find me directly there. But right now, if you could just pause this, leave us a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify podcast, however you listen to this, give us that review. That really helps. Or if you're on YouTube, hit that thumbs up, hit the subscribe button, hit the follow button wherever you're listening to make sure that you keep popping up in your feed. All right, let's kick into the show. Sirona Elton, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. So excited to be here.
This is great. So I know that, I mean, you, like me, have worn many hats in the music industry.
Yes.
Before we kind of get into the nuts and bolts of like royalties and everything that and registration, all the stuff I do want to get into that, that you are the best person suited to talk about it. What is your current title? What are you currently doing? And then give me like a little bit of background as well on just like where you come from in the industry.
Sure. So I would say I have three current titles.
Yeah.
So right. So the first is I'm the head of educational partnerships at the Mechanical Licensing Collective, the MLC for short. So that's one title. The other title, I'll actually combine professor and chair of the music industry department at the University of Miami Frost School of Music.
Cool.
And then the third title I'll say is author of the textbook, Music Business Handbook and Career Guide, starting with the 13th edition, which is the current edition.
Oh, yeah. And that book, I mean, I know it's been around for a while, but you came, when did you start kind of getting on that team that makes the new updates and became an author for it?
Yeah. So many people know it as the Baskerville book.
I knew that in music business school when I was in school in 2005, we were using that Baskerville book, but I don't believe your name was attached to it at that point.
No. So okay. I actually came on board to that project in 2021. And my involvement has begun with the 13th edition, which was published in December of 2022. And going forward with the 14th edition until I eventually retire. I will be the sole author, but we will somehow find a way to acknowledge the Baskerville name somehow still because, you know, the legacy connection. So
cool. Yeah.
Absolutely. So my background, I wanted to be in the music industry from when I was a really little kid and, you know, found ways to get involved with it growing up and through high school and undergrad. I did a master's in music industry for my master's degree. Then I went to work for a major record company for EMI, which is now part of the Universal family. I worked for EMI in New York for 8 years and went to law school while I was working for them.
What were you doing at EMI when you were working there?
Yeah. So one of the first things I did was I actually was teaching everybody around the country how to capture metadata into our system about our recordings and products. Back then, we used to call it label copy. But so I taught people how to capture that information. Then I spent a number of years putting in place, implementing an artist royalties system. So finishing that software build and that implementation and moving everybody out of the old systems and onto the new system. Then I spent some time helping design a way to manage our rights information about our recordings, how we could use them, how we couldn't use them, rights information, a global project for that. And lastly, lastly, and you'll see there's a magical word in this last thing that ties into what I do today. I was the vice president of mechanical licensing and repertoire data services, and kind of took over the mechanical licensing and royalties for the main U.S. Sort of central offices right there at the early stages of digital. So EMI, and then I've done work for other companies. I don't want to bore you too much with it, but
That's great. And let's talk about mechanical royalties and metadata and all that stuff. So can you just explain what are mechanical royalties, and then prior to the MLC, how did they function in the landscape?
Sure. So mechanical royalties, right? It's money paid connected to a mechanical license, which generally is granting permission. A mechanical license grants permission to somebody to make a reproduction and distribution, in other words, a copy that you're going to now make available of a song into a sound recording. So it's permission to reproduce and distribute a song as a sound recording and then make that sound recording available in audio only products like vinyl and CDs, or like permanent downloads and like interactive or on demand streams. Those are all examples of uses of music that require a mechanical license. And then when music is used that way, it generates mechanical royalties.
Okay. And who... talk to me about who needs to get that license and where do they get the license from?
Yeah. So there's really kind of three answers. So the first is for physical products like vinyl or CDs. Normally it's the record label that secures that mechanical license, and they are getting that permission usually from the music publisher of the song. Or sometimes the music publisher will hire an agent to handle that mechanical licensing for them, a company like the Harry Fox Agency, right? Okay. So often a record label is getting that directly from the publisher or from the Harry Fox Agency for physical products. For permanent downloads, that same model we use for physical is still very much the model we follow in the United States, where it's the record label, or if it's an independent artist who's doing this themselves, it's them getting that permission from the publishers or from the publisher's agent. And then for interactive streaming, like what you have on Spotify and Apple Music, in that case, it's actually this weird kind of combination in that the record label has a certain responsibility, especially if it's the very first time that that song is being recorded and made available. The record label still has to secure a certain kind of mechanical license if it's the very first use. But then the digital music service, like Spotify and Apple Music, they get a blanket license that's granted by the copyright law, grants them their mechanical license. So they're not requesting a license. They're operating according to the rules of the law that grants them a license, but they are then sending those royalties to the MLC to then pay out.
And that blanket that blanket license only started in 2021. Is that correct? Before, they weren't getting a blanket license. They were theoretically supposed to have been obtaining these licenses directly from all the publishers and then paying out the publishers directly, similar to how it worked in the sales era. Is that right?
That's correct. Exactly. It was a change in the U.S. copyright law called the Music Modernization Act. That change created this new way of doing things for digital music services and created this blanket license. And that went into effect January 1st, 2021.
Right on. So, and I want to talk about the Music Monetization Act, the MMA, in a second, because I think there's a lot of confusion around that still. But just to clarify and just to kind of repeat back to you what you just said to me, so I make sure that I have it and everybody listening's got it.
Sure.
A mechanical license is required when anyone wants to take a composition, take a song that's written by a songwriter and make a recording of it, or at least like make audio only recordings of it. And so mechanical license is issued by the songwriter reps, which are called publishers. Mm-hmm. And then in the sales era, the record label was getting those licenses, and then they would have to pay the publisher the mechanical royalties. So like license went from publisher to label, and then the label would make some sales, and then they'd pay some of those royalties, mechanical royalties, back to the publisher. That's kind of how sales worked. And I believe in the download era, how it worked was similarly, the sales, all the money, from iTunes essentially would be paid to the label or the artist if the artist didn't have a label. And then the artist or the label was required to pay the songwriters or their publishers the mechanical royalties. Is that kind of how it worked?
That's correct.
Or works, I should say, still.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And for sales, because like this goes back to my music business school days, way back in the day, like I always knew 9.1 cents was this number that was flying around or something like that. And that was like mechanical royalty rate. I believe that rate was just switched up to 12 cents a copy, I think. But just so we understand what these cents numbers means, if I'm an artist and I sell a vinyl record, I have, let's say I did a, let's just say I made a record of all cover songs. So I didn't write any of these songs, and there's 10 songs on there, theoretically. And no matter what I charge for my record, I'm going to have to pay 12 cents per each song. So 12 cents times 10, there's 10 songs in there. So I'd have to pay $1.20 out from every sale, whether I charge $10 or $20 or $100 per album, it doesn't matter, or free. I pay 12 cents per track to the corresponding songwriters or publishers, rather. Is that kind of how that works? Did I get that right?
Yes, except a couple of quick things. So
please,
that 12 cents was the rate for 2023. It's now gone up.
Okay.
A little for 2024. Oh, wow. It will go up every year according to the Consumer Price Index. There's an adjustment
made.
So it's a bit more than 12 cents now. And depending on when you're listening to this, it'll go up again in 2025. So it's a little bit more than that.
Nice.
And the other thing is, it's actually even more than that if the sound recording is more than 5 minutes long. That 9.1 cents back in the day and that 12 cents, that is the one that we most frequently talk about, but that only applies to recordings that are 5 minutes or less. If it's longer than 5 minutes, actually there's a formula. You round up to the next whole minute. So like, let's say one of those tracks on that album is 6 minutes or 5 minutes and 12 seconds. You round up to the next whole minute and you multiply that by another number to arrive at that amount, and it will be more than 12 cents. So
where do we find these rates? If you say they're going up every year, where does like a indie label or an artist find this to know how much they need to pay and to whom?
Right. So for those who are braver, this is published in something called the Code of Federal Regulations. But what's a little bit easier to find is I found it for my students in late December. I just literally Googled statutory rate 2024, found the Billboard article that was published like late December that announced what the Copyright Royalty Board set as the new rate. So you can get those rates on the Copyright Royalty Board's site or in the Federal Register, which can be a little hard to navigate. So sometimes just Googling that and finding like a trusted source about that rate is an easy way to find it. It's adjusted at the end, like sort of late December each year now.
Gotcha. So for the songwriters listening to this, if they have a cut on a record that is being sold and they know like, oh, there's a vinyl record or CDs being sold or downloaded rather, and they know that they have some cuts on some other people's records, they should theoretically be getting checks from the record label or the artist who is selling these albums or these cuts of their co-writes or songs that they have written for the record. Is that right?
Assuming they're their own publisher, yes. Normally the record label is going to pay the publisher and then the publisher is going to pay the songwriter. But if you have an independent artist that's acting as the record label, then they're the party paying it. And if you have a songwriter who is self-published, handling it all themselves, then they're the one receiving that directly from the party that's paying it. Yep.
It's interesting because, you know, they come out with these global reports every year and all the agencies just came out with their big reports this year. Like Midia did their report and the IFPI just issued their report saying, you know, like the music industry, based on whichever numbers you're looking at, Midia said the global recorded music industry made like $35 billion in 2023. The IFPI said it was like $27 billion or whatever. Everyone kind of calculates the numbers a little bit differently. And then they kind of slice up the pie saying, you know, in the U.S., it's like 84% of that money comes from streaming and very little in like physical and whatever. But anecdotally, when talking to independent labels, like I had the head of Coal Mine Records on, they said over 50% of their revenue comes from physical. I was just chatting with James Burgess, the head of A2IM, the organization that represents all the independent labels. He said, similarly, about 42% of all the revenue that their indie labels make comes from physical. And we see that vinyl is actually increasing every year in sales. So this theoretically, you know, I think a lot of us kind of put aside what physical can pay or what it should, or like we just don't even really talk about physical very much anymore. But I think it's something worth knowing, especially for the songwriters listening, that is a potential revenue stream that they should be making. And, you know, the major labels and the major publishers, I think they got it down. They know how these mechanisms work. But in this day and age, when there's millions of independent artists and indie labels that just don't quite know, I guess for the labels listening, the artists listening, they should be cutting checks and somehow paying out that rate on all of the sales that they're having, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the way it works for a lot of independent artists and especially the smaller indie labels is when you seek that mechanical license, you will usually pay the royalties then based on how many units you're going to manufacture. It's only later, perhaps, if you are a bigger, more established company with a credit track record. Yep. Like, you know how we all have personal credit? People say, check your credit score. Businesses have credit scores too. And once you get more established, you might have a publisher who's willing to grant you a mechanical license and allow you to pay them on a quarterly basis after the sale happens. Okay. Right. So all the major companies pay mechanical royalties after the sale happens on a quarterly basis. But if you're an independent artist, and, you know, you're going to press up 500 CDs or 1,000 vinyl records and you're seeking that mechanical license, that publisher is going to ask you for those royalties right now up front before you've sold any units. You know, in some ways that makes it simpler for you to have to keep track of stuff later. You prepaid them, you know, that's how a lot of that's going to work.
That's right. And that's what I remember Harry Fox Agency, HFA, had a service. They might still have it. I just haven't looked into this for a while, where that they you could obtain these licenses. But understanding that was specifically for cover songs. But I guess theoretically, if like I'm doing this as an indie artist and I co-wrote with, you know, some songs on the record with some other songwriters, I could. Could I also use that service, or I know Easy Song License has one as well, or something like that, where I could go in and be like, I want to pay my co-writer mechanical royalties. Can I do this via Harry Fox or Easy Song License? No.
So
just for cover songs.
So it's not exclusively for cover songs. It has more to do with the relationship with HFA. So a publisher, normally not so much a self-administered songwriter, but publishing companies might decide that they want to hire the Harry Fox Agency to handle this for them. And when they do that, they allow the Harry Fox Agency to grant licenses on their behalf. And then if HFA happens to be administering a share of a song, then you as the party needing that license can obtain that license through HFA, except that if they don't represent 100% of the song, sometimes as a small independent artist and a small number of units, they may not be willing to grant you that license through their systems. If you're co-writing with folks, though, as an independent artist, I would get a license just directly from those co-writers and pay them directly. Easy Song licensing is another tool that's out there, but it works a little differently. HFA is actually acting as the agent on behalf of a publisher. So they are granting you a license on behalf of the publisher. Easy Song licensing is for cover records primarily. This one part of what they do, cover song licensing, because what they will do is they can't grant you a license. They're not acting on behalf of a publisher. What they will do is help you do the right paperwork in order to obtain a compulsory license under the law, is what Easy Song licensing is offering. They're not an agent on behalf of somebody. They will do what's needed and send the official legal notices to the publishers and send them their royalties so that you can proceed with a compulsory license, which is a license granted by the law. And that's only going to apply to cover records. They also have a separate like custom licensing option you could talk to them about. But their cover song licensing is their one of the main offerings.
Right. Okay. So it's a little bit more white glove service where they can kind of do the paperwork, figure it all out for you. Whereas like HFA is only going to do it if they are acting on behalf of the agent for the publishers, like you said.
That's right.
So we're not going to find all songs on HFA's, I believe it calls song file or whatever it's called these days. But on Easy Song License, you can go to them and they will almost act as your rep to kind of help you all out through this. Okay. That's cool. And just to clarify, now this is all really just for sales. So now to like flip for the streaming side a little bit, this isn't really the process for streams because correct me if I'm wrong, but I, as the artist or as the label, do I need to get that mechanical license if I'm doing like a streaming only release, or is this just for sales that we're talking about?
So you as the label or independent artist still do need to secure a mechanical license, even if you're only going to put it out through streaming, if this is what we call a first use. If this is a brand new song and this is the first time it's being recorded under the law, you as the sound recording copyright owner, record label, you have got to secure that first use mechanical license from the publisher. Because without you having done that, the compulsory license that Spotify and Apple Music operate under doesn't go into effect for that song. If it's a first use, you, the label or indie artist, still have to secure that. But if it's a cover, then you don't have to worry about getting that mechanical license for streaming only. The license that the digital service has will take care of that.
Real quick, I want to let you know about DistroKid. Well, I'm sure you already know about DistroKid, but they are partners with Ari's Take, and they are a great company that can help get your music distributed to Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, all of that. Over a million artists use DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I have distributed some of my music in the past. And something I appreciate about DistroKid as not just an artist, but someone who studies this space, is they have been one of the most innovative companies over the last 10 years. They came in and completely changed the game. One of the first companies offering unlimited uploads, and now most of the other distributors have had to change their policies to kind of copy and follow suit what DistroKid was doing, and the industry had changed, of course. DistroKid doesn't keep a commission. That means you keep 100% of your royalties and earnings from the DSPs. They also offer payment splitting. They call it splits, something that for me at this point is a deal breaker. I don't want to have to cut checks to all my collaborators and the producers and everybody else that is owed royalties and owed splits from my earnings. DistroKid will cut those checks directly. You can get them to your collaborators to sign up, and then DistroKid will cut all the checks to all your collaborators. And they were one of the first to offer that of the DIY self-service distributors. DistroKid continues to innovate. Check them out. If you need to get your music out there, DistroKid.com. Got it. So, okay. So that's super helpful. And that's a protection I know that songwriters have, is that they get a say who they want to release that song first.
That's why
you call it the first use.
Exactly.
Does it work? Now here, I've actually gotten this question a few times from friends of mine, where they co-write a song with somebody. Mm-hmm. They've fallen out of terms mm-hmm. with that somebody. And that artist now, the co-writer, the artist wants to release that song on their new artist project. Can they do that? Or do they still need that permission from their co-writer? Like, can they do it as one half of the song?
Or yeah, wading a bit into like legal advice. But I would say the factors that come into play are certainly the party that wants to release it must have permission from the copyright owner. However, the copyright law itself also says when you have co-owners of a copyright, any one of them can grant a non-exclusive license to somebody without needing the permission of the other parties. Of course, if the parties between them agree via contract that none of them are going to grant anybody a license for anything other than their own share, then it's not a copyright infringement matter. It's more of a breach of contract matter if one co-writer, right? So you have to get into like, okay, what kind of agreement, if any, existed between these co-writers? Did they like actually happen to sign a collaboration agreement and say what they would or wouldn't do? And I would say if, you know, that's where you kind of may want to make sure to talk to a lawyer about all of the facts on the ground and decide how they feel like you should proceed.
Interesting. So getting past the first use clause, let's say I want to do a cover, because this happens all the time where artists want to release cover songs. And again, making another clarification, we're talking audio only. So we're not talking anything that deals with video, but I want to release a cover song to the services, to Spotify, Apple Music, et cetera. And the song's already been released, so I'm covering somebody else's version of it. Streaming only, I don't have to do this whole process of, like we just talked about, getting the license, either Harry Fox or Easy Song License. I can just distribute that song, and the DSP, they'll handle the licensing for me. I don't have to worry about it as the indie artist or label. Is that right?
That's right. But I would encourage, invite, beg, plead with you that as you're setting up that recording with your digital distributor, and you might have fields where you can put in metadata. If there's a field there for the writer names, please put in the names of the real songwriters, because eventually what's going to happen is that information about that sound recording being streamed on those services is going to end up reported to the MLC. And we need to match up that sound recording to the correct song that it's connected to. And having those writer names, the digital services aren't getting those writer names from anywhere else. They're getting them from the sound recording provider. So when you fill in that, and that's a cover record, you know you didn't write that song, put in the names of the real writers of that song so that metadata can travel with it.
Great. And that's great. And fortunately, most distributors these days are requiring that if you're distributing a cover song. If they don't require, I mean, they should be requiring it if they're not, but that's great advice, because that helps get the songwriters paid for that. So you mentioned, moving into the streaming realm, talking about the MLC, which I know by this point, most people have heard about and kind of maybe understand what it is or what it does, but help clarify, give us the breakdown. What is the MLC and what does the MLC do?
Sure. So don't worry if you're still trying to figure it out. We're still new. you know, the MLC, this new way of doing things only went into effect January 1st, 2021. So that's still relatively recent. So the MLC is a new nonprofit organization. We are governed by a board made up of publishers and songwriters, and how that is all structured is laid out in the copyright law. So a lot of what we do is actually laid out in the copyright law that says we can do these things, we must do these, and we're not allowed to do these. So we're very heavily regulated by the copyright law. We exist to administer this new blanket compulsory mechanical license. So blanket meaning a service like Spotify only needs one of these mechanical licenses that will, kind of have underneath it, I don't want to say cover because people confuse that with cover records, but this one blanket license will take care of all of the mechanical licenses that Spotify needs in the United States. Okay.
Okay.
So it's a blanket license instead of a work by work, one by one license like it used to be. It's a compulsory license. Compulsory means the law grants the license, which is different than like a voluntary license that you get directly by negotiating with the rights holder. The law itself grants this license. Okay. So the MLC isn't granting a license. The law grants the license, but the law requires a service like Spotify that wants to operate under this license to follow a whole bunch of rules. And some of those rules require that they have to file paperwork with the MLC to give notice that they're going to rely on this license. And then they have to pay royalties to the MLC on a monthly basis in a very specific format. And they're calculated using something we call the statutory royalty rates. So those are also kind of set by federal regulation. So you have to comply with all these rules to operate under this license. So services like Spotify and others use this as their mechanical license, and they pay this money to the MLC every month, and they report sound recording usage information to the MLC every month. So they'll tell us this sound recording was streamed this many times, and here are the writer names if they have it, right?
Okay.
Then what we are doing is we take that data and we are maintaining this really huge database of song ownership information. And it's a public database. Anybody can search it. And actually, if you have enough server space and smart IT folks, you can even sign up to take a regular download of the entire database. But don't try that on your laptop. It'll blow it up. It's too big. Don't do that. So we have a huge, huge multi-million song database. And so every month we're trying to match that sound recording usage to the song in the database. And if we match it, then on that song, we know who the publishers are, and what share of that song's royalties they're entitled to. And so then we pay that money to those publishers, and then those publishers pay their songwriters. So for some songwriters, if you are signed up with a publisher or a publishing administrator, we are paying them, and then they are paying you. But if you're a self-published or self-administered songwriter, it's just you, then we'll pay you directly.
Okay, so you mentioned there's a statutory royalty rate. So when Spotify sends the MLC a report that says Ari's recordings have been streamed 10,000 times this month, what does that earn in dollars or cents? Like, how would then Ari's recordings know? What do Ari's songwriters on these Ari recordings know how much they're making? What is that rate?
So it varies tremendously. So what we have with respect to streaming is we don't have a set rate like we do with that 12 cents. What we have is a formula, a four-part formula. And that formula varies according to the kind of service that's being offered. So for example, the rates are different if you're talking about a stream on a subscription service as opposed to a stream on an ad-supported service. Those rates are slightly different.
Okay.
Also, the way when you start using that formula, it gets calculated every month. And as part of the formula, you have to total up the total amount of revenue that that service and that offering, like, so take Spotify, the amount of money, the revenue Spotify earned on its ad-supported service versus what the revenue it earned on its subscription service is a different number in the formula for the month. And that number is never the same month to month. Like what they made in January is different than what they made in February, right? So one of the variables in the formula is the total revenue the service made. Another variable in the formula is the total number of subscribers. That's different every month. Another variable is the total number of streams that happened on the service. That's different every month. Right.
Okay.
Another part of the formula is the amount of money those services paid to the PROs, which is going to be different every month. And so the formula doesn't change every month. It's different by service type, but then the numbers that you have to plug into that formula are slightly different every month. And they're going to be different for Spotify than they are for Apple, than they are for Amazon. Right. So it's different every month. It's a fraction of a penny. It's not a full penny, generally speaking.
Right.
But exactly how much it is different every single month. What I can also, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, I mean, that it's similar to how they calculate royalties for sound recordings. It's sounding of like a very similar formula and model where, like, you know, with sound recordings, it's a pro rata system. So it's like based on stream share. So the number of streams that I got versus the number of streams that all streams on the platform, my percentage of that, I get, you know, if I got 1% of all streams on Spotify, I would essentially make 1% of all the money that Spotify made less their commission. Is that kind of like, is it like that pro rata set? Now, granted, you sliced it up and they're slicing it up similarly. Like if my streams came from Mexico, that pays a different rate than if they came from the US. Whereas like if they came from a subscriber that paid $10 a month, it's going to be different than if it came from someone who's on ad supported. Is it sliced up similarly like that?
Yes. So a couple things. So one, okay. I just want to pull aside international because this is US only. The MLC only does US.
The MLC is just US.
Right.
Okay.
But you're correct in that actually the formula starts with a percentage of revenue calculation. Then you ultimately subtract how much those services pay to the performing rights organizations. And then you're left with an amount of money that you have to make sure, like, you know, there's some minimums involved, but ultimately you end up with a pool of money that is the mechanical royalty pool for the month. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, you take the total number of streams, divide that pool of money by those total number of streams, and that is the amount of mechanical royalties per stream. So if you have more streams than somebody else, you're going to get more per, you know, it's your number of streams times that per stream amount for the month.
And is that how the MLC has calculated it internally as well? Is it's a pro rata system?
Well, we don't change the calculation. So what you have to remember, which a lot of people may not know, the MLC, if we collect $100 in royalties, we pay out $100 in royalties. The digital music services separately pay our operating costs. Right. So no commission. Right. So once we get that, I mean, we calculate it as well to make sure what they paid us is accurate. But then the only additional anything we're doing to that number is dividing it up amongst the owners of that song, right? So Spotify knows that for song, for this month on their ad-supported service, they've got to end up paying the MLC mechanical royalties of this amount per stream for this song. Once we have that, then we know if that's got to be divided between three publishers. So we split it a bit further just based on the share percent. But the calculation doesn't change from what they pay us to what we pay out. It's we pass it straight through.
Okay. So, So if Spotify, and I believe I read somewhere that the MLC has since January 1st, 2021, you've paid out over $1.5 billion.
Yeah, we're heading very close to $2 billion very, very soon. Yes.
Amazing. So to clarify, so the $2 billion, let's just say once you get there, $2 billion that has been, just so I'm understanding this correctly, that has been sent by the DSPs, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, et cetera, et cetera. $2 billion has been sent to the MLC, and then the MLC takes that $2 billion and sends it directly to publishers. But the way that you're sending it to publishers, and this is the part that I don't quite understand, is it a similar pro rata model, meaning that, like, if me as a songwriter, I got 1% of all the streams that were reported to you of that $2 billion, I would make 1% of all of that money? Is that kind of how that works?
I think you'll effectively get there, but we end up calculating a per stream amount of money. So it's not like, what is your pro rata share of all streams? You end up taking the total mechanical royalty pool, the total number of streams, you divide the royalty pool by the number of streams, and you get a per stream amount for that month for that service offering. So, you know, for the month of February, the Spotify ad supported is this amount of mechanical royalties per stream. Then we look at any given song and say, how many streams did that song have in the month? It's that times the amount per stream. But ultimately, you end up with a proportional allocation. Effectively, you just you're arriving at it differently by dividing up the total stream count. The total stream count into the total mechanical royalty pool, you end up with a per stream amount. And then that gets applied to each song, however many times it was streamed.
And is it the MLC's per stream amount, or are you using the exact same formula and calculation that the DSP sends you? So if the DSP
says the same.
Okay.
We're so all using the statutory royalties rate. That's what the formula calls for.
Okay. So they send you and they'll say, like, Ari Songs made this amount of money. They're going to send it to you. You don't throw it into a black box and then create your own formula and divvy it up.
No.
If Spotify says that Ari made $23 in mechanical royalties based on their calculation, you're just going to take that $23 and put it in my account, theoretically, right?
Yes. Yeah. So they use the statutory royalty rate, and so do we, meaning they calculate what they owe us. We calculate what they owe us. We both use the same formula and arrive at exactly how much they owe us for that, the mechanical royalties for that sound recording that month on that service and that offering. Then let's pretend you are one publisher 100%, let's say, on that song.
Yep.
That money just goes straight over to you. We don't mess with it.
Okay. But right, if I had a few co-writers and we each have our own respective publishers, that's when you calculate. It's like, okay, this recording has three songwriters and their three respective publishers. And so Spotify says this recording earned $23. And then you take the 23 divided by three and send it
to
each publisher.
Or however the shares are that you set up. I mean, we don't make that up. You would have registered it, and maybe it's 50, 25, 25. Like whatever you and your other co-writers agreed. We then would divide up that amount of money according to the shares that were registered with us on the song.
Okay, and because theoretically every songwriter would theoretically have a split sheet with their co-writers saying, I'm going to own 25% of this composition, you're going to own 25%, and let's say the producer of this, or the original recording that also co-wrote the song from the beginning, made the beat, this is very typical in hip-hop and pop and whatever, is going to have 50% of the composition. Mm-hmm. And so that then will get registered with our respective publishers. When I register, it's like, okay, I have 25% of this song. My co-writer, who happens to be the producer of the recording, is going to say, all right, I have 50%. And then that's going to get registered with the respective publishers in the MLC. So then when you break it down, you see, oh, these three people wrote it, but this person gets 50%. They get 25%, or their publisher gets 50%, and you pay the publisher 50%, and then the publisher will pay them. Now, what if these co-writers don't have publishers, if they're independent songwriters and like, I don't have a publisher to register and talk to the MLC, like, how do I get some of this?
Are your publisher. So everybody, all songwriters start off as self-published, right? You are self-published until and unless you then do a publishing deal or sign up with a publishing administrator who's going to act as your publisher for administration purposes. Let's say none of that has happened. It's just you. You will become a member of the MLC. It is free to join. You sign up with the MLC as a publisher because you are a publisher. You yourself are a publisher. And then you would register just your share of that song, just the share that applies to you. And so we'll pay you as the publisher and you can pay yourself as the songwriter.
Got it. Okay, cool. So now I know the next question that everybody has, and you've alluded to it and you've mentioned it, performing rights organizations. You said PROs a few times, and in the States that's ASCAP, BMI, you know, CSAC, I guess, Global Music Rights, but like most people are with ASCAP or BMI if we're talking in the States. Where does that fall into any of this?
Right. So, I mean, that's a separate kind of revenue, right? You know,
but it's still revenue for songwriters, right?
Absolutely. It is an amazing revenue source for songwriters. Streaming generates public performance royalties, but so does other forms of public performance, like at concert halls and nightclubs and radio, right? So and use in TV and film can generate public performance royalties as well. So it's a different set of money from mechanicals, and people can get really confused to understand that streaming generates performance and also mechanicals for some kinds of streaming. Not all streaming generates mechanicals. Some kinds do.
You mean like when you say not all streaming, you're talking like digital radio.
That's
like, like Sirius XM or whatever. Pandora Radio doesn't generate mechanicals, but it generates performance royalties. That's not all kinds of streaming, right?
Exactly. So internet radio generates performance royalties for songwriters. On-demand streaming, the law calls it interactive streaming, generates performance royalties and mechanical royalties. Both.
So like Spotify, Apple Music. Got it.
Generate both.
And there was this calculator. Yeah. And I saw, correct me if I'm wrong, but like it was cool. Billboard released this like streaming calculator a few months back where it said like how much you could expect to earn from Spotify and Apple Music based on a certain number of streams. Now, of course, this was like averaged amongst the reports that they had. But what it showed was that mechanical royalties and performance royalties were about 50-50. Maybe mechanical made a little bit more than performance. But collectively, that was about one-fifth or something, almost 20%, 20 to 25% of what the recording earned. Is that what you're seeing? Do you know what does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'd have to go back and look at numbers, because one of the things that you also have to take into account is what time period you're talking about. The mechanical royalty rate in terms of, you know, which is connected to a higher level rate in terms of how much percent of revenue from streaming goes towards the songs for both performance and mechanicals, that has changed over the years and keeps going up and up and up. So today, right, in 2024, we'd have to look and see what we call them the Phono 4 time period, which we're in this Phono 4 time period. That will tell us what percentage of the total revenue on a streaming service goes towards the combined mechanical and performance royalties, right? So we number will be a little different next year. It's going up a little bit every year. So we'd have to look at that. Frankly, the amount that goes to the sound recording companies, we can try and find some articles that talk about that. But generally that's not a publicly shared figure. Like Sony doesn't just put out there, and DistroKid doesn't just put out there, this is what they've negotiated as a percent of revenue from the streaming services. That's confidential. So we can make some guesstimates, as that calculator sounds like it did. And you know, sort of see where that lands at. But I'd have to double check what the latest, you know, what the percentage of revenue for combined mechanical and performance is for 2024.
Yeah.
What year are we?
Yeah,
And then make some assumptions about the sound recording revenue percent, which is harder to find, because that's not a statutory number.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, I'll link to this calculator, and I believe you have to be like a Billboard subscriber or something like that. It's from Manet, law firm, and they actually have it directly on their website that you don't have to pay for either. But
that's great.
The last I looked at it, and I was just curious how accurate this was. It did say, like, when I'm calculating this, and I can, let's see if I can share my screen. And you might be able to see this for a second here. It's like, you know, you can type in a number of streams here. So if I did a million streams, and then they've calculated Spotify will pay a total of $5,515 from a million streams, about. And I believe these are just U.S. streams. So to clarify, this
the
is
rate's
just
different
in
every
US.
Country. Yeah.
Right. So that's why they're like, wow, 5,000 for a million streams. That's over half a penny a stream. What is that you're talking about? Less than, you know, this is U.S. streams. They pay a lot more than international. And Apple is paying $8,191. But of this money on Spotify, it says mechanical is going to get $699 and performance is going to get $492. And I add them up, and that's, that divided by 5,000 is 23% or so. But then if I do like Apple Music and I do 836 plus 762 equals 1598. And then let's divide that by 8,191. That's 19.5%. So that's like 20%. Is this like, help me understand what these numbers are.
I'm not sure. I'd have to literally look at the fine print there to see exactly, you know, what they're using and what rate period they're applying to this. So, you know, and I'm just pulling up some rates myself, and we're working on some great infographics to help explain the mechanical rates to folks, that we're hoping to get out, you know, sometime in the next few months. But like, like, for example, looking at the Phono 4 rates, right, that start applying to 2023 and 2024, you know, the Phono 4 rates for 2024 is 15.2% of revenue. So at a very, very simple calculation.
Just mechanical?
No, 15.2 would be the all-in mechanical and performance.
And performance. Got it. Got it.
Correct. Okay. And then there's some, you know, minimums and maximums and stuff that applies in the formula, but that's the sort of headline rate that would mean of the revenue the service is getting, 15.2% or so of that should go towards those song royalties split between performance and mechanicals. Right. And then how much then is paid to record companies as opposed to what's kept by the service? That's the stuff that is, you know, harder to pin down again, and that it's not like a statutory rate. Like that number I just gave you is a federally published statutory rate, whereas the rate that's paid to sound recording companies is a negotiated rate.
That makes sense because, I mean, Spotify and Apple have both publicly said that they pay about two-thirds or around 70% or so, you know, 67, 70% of the revenue that they take in. They keep about 30%, 32, 33%, and they pay out the rest to rights holders. That's probably why I'm getting around 20, 23% of it when you said it should be 15% or 15.1%, because you're calculating on the gross revenue that they're making, whereas they keep a little commission, but this doesn't take into consideration any commission that any of the DSPs are keeping, right?
No, correct. It's just, you know, if they bring in $100 in revenue, 15.2% of that ends up going off to song royalties.
Sure.
If we're keeping this simple. And then the rest is divided between them and the record labels.
Right, right. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, all this to be said is like songwriters, artists who are also their own songwriters, you know, they always ask me, and they're trying to figure out like, is it worth it to do all of this work to try to, you know, get some of my money that's not coming from my distributor? You know, I'm signed up to a PRO. I'm signed up to, you know, through TuneCore or whatever to get my songs out through DistroKid, Symphonic, whatever. Isn't that enough? Like, is it really worth hunting down this additional money? And it seems like, you know, if you don't sign up for, if you don't think about your publishing, you're missing out on anywhere between 15 and 24% or whatever, however you calculate it, that you should theoretically be earning. Now, I guess I want to also ask about, you kept mentioning this is U.S. only.
That's right.
How do international mechanical royalties work?
So international mechanical royalties are going to start in the country where the activity is happening. So there are mechanical rights organizations similar to the MLC, but a little different, all over the world. In some countries, they are a separate organization from the performing rights organization. Some countries, you have a mechanical rights and a performing rights separate. Some, in a lot of countries, they are combined to be one organization. Mm. And so Spotify in the UK, for example, is going to pay mechanical royalties to MCPS is the acronym for the Mechanical Rights Society in England. That's part of, it's part of the PRS for Music sort of overall organization. They were combined some number of years back. And the rate that Spotify is going to pay has nothing to do at all with the US rates. It's generally going to be a rate that is negotiated usually in that country between the Music Publishing Association and the Sound Recording Association, and the digital services will negotiate an industry-wide rate. You know, I'm not an expert on every single country around the world in terms of exactly how that rate is determined, but often it's either a negotiation of those parties in that country, or there are some like internationally negotiated rates that they might decide that they want to embrace in their country. So that money would flow from Spotify to the Mechanical Rights Society in that country. And then they're going to look in their database and pay whoever it is that, that their database says to pay, which might be a publisher in that country. So like, let's say if you're a writer signed up with Sony, right? And Sony, your publishing deal, let's pretend it's global. So the Mechanical Rights Society in England is going to pay Sony Publishing in the UK. And then Sony Publishing in the UK is going to send that money back to Sony Publishing in the US, who will then pay the songwriter. But let's say, you know, you don't have a publisher in another country, right? That money is going to sit there with that Mechanical Rights Society waiting for you to come and claim it. And as an independent songwriter right now, handling your own publishing, it is challenging to collect that money if you're trying to do it on your own, right? Another option would be here in the United States to sign up with some company that's going to administer your publishing globally for you and go get that money for you. But it's sitting there with
the MLC won't do that.
The MLC won't.
Me.
We're not allowed by law. The law does not allow us to do that.
Okay. But this is what I do want to touch on, because this has always been so confusing to me. MCPS, which you referenced, which is your counterpart, the MLC's counterpart in the UK, does have reciprocity with every other organization, including the MLC. So it will get money for from US streams from the MLC and pay them. And then you will pay, or no, but you won't pay. So why don't you have reciprocity? I know you said by law, but help me understand this law, the MMA. Why?
I know. Well, so we could get into why that could get into the fun of politics of trying to get a law passed. But what? So the law, very literally, specifically in Section 115 of the copyright law, only allows the MLC to collect these royalties from U.S. services. We are not allowed by law to collect from overseas. So we don't have the ability to do a true reciprocal two-way relationship.
Gotcha.
We do have to pay the MCPS so they can pay their UK publishers if those songs are used on a US service. We've got to pay the rights holder no matter where they live, right? But we're not allowed. Now, why, you say? Well, you know, here's the truth of the matter, right? Laws in Congress that affect the music industry, usually they don't get passed unless the entire music industry is aligned, right? Rarely will a senator want to get in the between publishers and record labels, or in between, you know, digital music services and label. Like, they don't want to get in the middle of this crazy industry we're in. So the only way that laws get changed is when all the parties in the music industry, all the parties affected by the law, come together and say, we all want this law written this way. Okay. And to get everybody to then agree and be like, yes, we support it as written, there's bargaining that happens. There are compromises that get reached. And, you know, there was a compromise somewhere in there in order to keep everybody aligned on this that said that the MLC will not collect internationally. So here we are.
Okay. So so if you're a songwriter out there, wait, so just to clarify, so for the international, so for the songwriters that are outside the U.S., they can sign up with their local organization, and they don't need to sign up with the MLC because their localization has reciprocity agreements, and they will theoretically get the money from the MLC for U.S. streams. So they can, they're good to just either work with an admin publisher or just sign up with their local organizations. Mm-hmm. Now, can a U.S. songwriter, so if because the MLC doesn't collect internationally, could a U.S. songwriter actually sign up with MCPS?
That is a great question. And it's funny, I have it like on a post-it note right here on my monitor to try and get to an answer. I don't know. I think that's a fascinating question.
Okay. Right. Because the only way that I have known how to get international mechanical royalties as a songwriter is to work with a publisher or work with an admin publisher like a TuneCore Publishing or a Centric or a Song Trust, or now I just found out that Horus has publishing, or there's a lot of these admin publishing services out there. I'm with one of them that is like my administrator that just goes around. So I personally am not signed up with the MLC because my publisher signed up with the MLC.
Exactly.
And that's what you were saying before. Like, you don't, songwriters don't need to sign up with the MLC if they have a publisher or admin publisher because they're signed up.
Exactly. If you, that's exactly right.
Yeah. And I do know that a lot of songwriters don't sign up with international or with these local mechanical rights organizations or performing rights organizations like MCPS and PRS. Both, I believe, charge $100 to sign up each.
Okay.
Whereas, like, you know, as you said, the MLC is free to sign up for, you know, in the States, ASCAP and BMI, they're much cheaper. One of them might be free. I don't know. They keep changing their rates.
Okay.
But whereas, like, you know, an admin publisher, some of them are charged like 50 or 100 or 75 bucks to sign up for, and they take a little commission. So, you know, weighing the costs and all of that stuff to figure out what might make the most sense for the songwriter. But yeah, I mean, I think for an independent self-administered songwriter, it's like really hard to just like know, like, how do I get 100% of my royalties out there? And unfortunately, the answer is not sign up with a PRO in the MLC if you're in the States, because you'd be missing out on your international mechanicals.
That's correct. That's correct. And I mean, you know, you could theoretically, I guess, go to each of them in each country and sign up. That won't be easy. You know, it might not be free, right? As you said, they're not going to likely pay you in US dollars. They may or may not be good at providing you customer support in English. So, you know, it's not for the faint of heart. It is challenging. No question.
Well, no, but this is helpful. And it makes a lot of sense. And so, I guess moving forward, I want to get back to this like rate increase that you said it was like 15.1% where it is now or something like that, or is that right? And then it just keeps going up, or what is this?
Right. So
are we going to keep making more money?
So from a statutory rate perspective, right, the statutory rates are set by something called the Copyright Royalty Board. It's three judges. Okay. We call them the CRB for short. And they set rates for these five-year time windows. So they'll make a decision, they'll publish them, and then those are the rates, the statutory rates for the 5 years, and it will say exactly what 5 years. And when we're referring to these rate periods, they have like a big long name, so we give them a little shorthand name. So right now, the rates that we're talking about, we call them FONO. And right now we're in the FONO 4 rate period, which basically means the statutory rates that specifically apply to the years 2023 through 2027. So right now the FONO 4 rates apply through 2023 to 2027. We do have in our frequently asked questions on our website, the time periods and the names for those, like FONO 3 applied to an earlier 5 years and FONO 2 applied to an earlier 5 years. But now we're in FONO 4, 2023 to 2027. And both the rates for like downloads and physical products and the rates for streaming are going up a little bit each year. They're different rates. That 15.1 number that I told you, that's like what we call the headline rates for streaming. It started as 15.1 in 2023. Then it goes to 15.2 in 24, 15.25 next year, 3. I have to zoom in a bit without my reading glasses. 15.3 for 2026, and then 15.35 for 2027. That's what we call the headline streaming rate. That's the percentage of revenue that then covers both performance and mechanicals, right?
And then how does it get divvied up amongst performance and mechanicals? Is that by law also?
So it's not in, it's partially. So the performance amount is negotiated with the PROs. Okay. That part is not set by this statute. So once you take the, let's say you're in this year, so you're saying 15.2%. Of revenue. Now you have this total, we call it the all-in royalty pool, this total lump of money that's for that. Then what you have to do is subtract whatever was negotiated between the digital services and each PRO. That gets subtracted, but that's private and negotiated. Like what ASCAP and Spotify negotiate is between them. So that gets negotiated and subtracted from that pool, which is then like the initial mechanical pool. There's some adjustments to make sure there's some minimum thresholds that get applied to make sure it doesn't drop too low. And then you're left with an amount of money that then you divide by the total amount of streams for the month to get you an amount per stream. So this is that like four-part formula that we're going to create some infographics that explain.
I was going to ask about the minimum thresholds. That's good to know that it's in there, because what's to say that ASCAP doesn't just negotiate for 15.2% of their revenue, and then they pay all the money to ASCAP, and now there's no money left over for BMI or the MLC or anybody else.
But, so that can happen.
Got it.
Yep.
Okay. That makes sense. Interesting. Well, it's all like beyond, it's super complicated.
I think,
you know, just to zoom way back out, for the indie artists, songwriters, managers who are listening to this, even the indie labels and publishers, I mean, what is the takeaway that they need to know? If you just can break it down in the simplest terms, zoomed way out, how do people get their money from streams?
Right. So, I mean, okay. So we actually have a great diagram on our website. Maybe I'll post a link to that helps explain this too.
Sure.
There's two sets of revenue related to streaming on the song side of the house: performance royalties, mechanical royalties. Mm-hmm. And then there's actually two different types of revenue that flow on the sound recording side of the house related to streaming as well. Some of which will come through your distributor and some of which will come directly through Sound Exchange. We didn't get
in
into
the States
any of
or
that.
Or neighboring rights organization.
Correct.
Internationally.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Okay. So performance and mechanicals on the song side, record distributor and neighboring rights on the sound recording side. So there's generally going to be, you know, as many as four different sets of activities you have to do to register your sound recording or your song, depending on what country you're in, right? If you're in a country where the mechanical rights and performance rights are one organization, you may only have to register your song once. Here in the U.S., registering your song with a PRO is separate from registering your song with the MLC. So you need to do both. You need to do both.
Got it.
And, you know, look, it's your money. It may be a lot of money, may not be a lot of money. Philosophically, if you don't claim it, it's going to be paid out to other parties. Maybe that alone is enough that makes you be like, no, I want my money. It's my money. Even if it just buys me a cup of coffee down the block, it's my money.
Sure.
Right. And once you're set up on these services and once you've registered those first couple of songs and you know how to do it, the process of registering a new song is not super time, you know, it's not a big time suck. It's not complicated.
Okay.
It just feels that way the first time you do it. But the first time you drove a car was hard too, right? And now you drive all over the place and don't even think about it. So I would say, you know, be patient with yourself the first time you're learning how to register a song with your PRO or how you're registering a song with the MLC. It's clunky because it's new. By the time you're doing the fifth one, you're like, oh, I got it. Done. Like 2 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
It's not that hard.
Wait, I just want to touch on, you just said, if I don't get my money, then it's paid out to somebody else. Let's just say I've had 50 songs that have been out for 20 years and I'm just now hearing about mechanical royalties. And is that money gone? Is it paid out to, can I not claim it? Or how do I get that money, those royalties?
So I've got good news and I've got great news. I'll start with the good news first, okay? The good news is the law also thought about this and had something to say about this.
Okay.
And the law requires the MLC to always try for at least 3 years, always a minimum of at least 3 years to try and find the right party to pay. After at least 3 years, it can be longer. Longer is better for the little guy. Right. The MLC can try for 5 years. It can try for, it can't try for like 100 years, can't try forever, but it can try for more than 3 years. At some point, though, that money, then whatever's left and has still not been paid out, it will go into a pool of money that is paid out proportionally to everybody who was paid royalties for that time period. So it's going to go to somebody. Another great thing about the law, law is when that money does get paid, let's say it gets paid to a, you know, publishers, they are required by law to share that money with their songwriters. So that is super cool. They will have to pay a portion of that money to their songwriters when they get that money. Okay.
Great.
But the great news right now is that because also of a quirk in the Music Modernization Act, it allowed digital music services who were sitting on unpaid mechanical royalties going back to like the beginning of time, which is more like 2007 for the streaming world. If they're sitting on those unpaid mechanical royalties, they were allowed to transfer that money and that usage information to the MLC and avoid getting sued. So they did. They transferred about $427 million to us. And we call that historical unmatched. It goes back from 2020 and back all the way to 2007 in some cases. And it is not too late to get that money right now. Obviously, like being very time sensitive to when someone might be listening to this right now, it's March 2024. It is not too late to go back all the way to 2007. Okay. We have a whole page on our website that explains historical unmatched royalties, especially if you're listening to this, you know, not like right now in March, but maybe it's December 24 or something.
Yeah.
You need to check that page to see if you can still go all the way back that far. You'll always be able to go at least 3 years, but right now you can go all the way back to 2007.
Cool. Sweet. All right. Well, that's great. And I would encourage, we'll link to that in the show notes as well.
Awesome.
As the guy that you were talking about of the four places to collect your money and get registered and stuff. Cool. Well, this has been so helpful and informative. And I know the people that have stuck with us through the whole conversation are the ones that are actually interested in taking their career seriously and making this a real profession and want to make sure that they're getting paid where they deserve to get paid. So that's great. And I know we have some people that have stuck with us the whole time because I have a very smart audience on this show. So
you do.
I appreciate you breaking it down and really going very, very deep into the weeds with all of this because, I appreciate it. I know that everyone's appreciative too. I have one final question that I ask everyone who comes on the show, and that is, what does it mean to you to make it in the new music business?
I would say that it means to be able to live the kind of lifestyle that you want. And maybe that means you want to be a household name and you fly around on private jets all over the world and tour all over. Or maybe it means that you have enough money to have a 3-bedroom house and 2 cars and 2 dogs and, you know, put your kids through college, right? Or maybe it means you just want a little bit of extra money while you do this other thing as well. I think it's such a personal decision. Success means something so different to everybody. But to me, to make it, like, are you making it? It means you're able to hit that level of success that you're targeting and live the way you want to. You're making enough income to be able to live the kind of life that you define as success from music.
Love it. Sarona Elton, thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you, Ari.
Today's episode was edited by Ari Davids with music by Brassroots District and produced by all the great people at Ari's Take. This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over 1 million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com.